We thought it'd last forever, right? Well, we're here to tell you that it probably won't last forever, and you might want to get it converted as quick as possible and get your library all digital as soon as possible.
Now, this is a topic that we're going to spend some more time on in the next part of our hour. We're going through some just general tech articles right now, giving you an overview of the news, and then we're going to review some of these articles in more detail in the rest of the show. But tech companies are hating FCC's net neutrality plan, according to a BGR article. Federal Communications Chairman Tom Wheeler kept insisting that people would be more open to his plan once they actually read it. However, now that it's been unveiled and made available to everyone, no one likes it the better. Wall Street Journal notes that Amazon and Netflix have both released official statements reiterating their opposition to letting ISPs create quote-unquote fast lanes that would let them charge content providers more to ensure their data gets delivered more quickly. And we'll talk about that a lot more later in the show.
Have you ever had an iOS device start sending iMessages, but you can't get it back to sending SMS? For people that switch away from an iOS device, such as an iPhone, or even if you have iMessage on your iPad, you actually have, sometimes Apple's having a hard time releasing it to go back to your regular SMS messaging system. For that, Apple's actually facing a lawsuit where somebody isn't getting their SMS messages, and they're actually... she's actually suing them for contractual interference and unfair competition laws. So we'll look into that.
And an article from earlier this week, AT&T being close to announcing its DirecTV purchase, which the merger and purchase has actually happened now, and we're going to talk a lot more about that. AT&T has been active discussions to buy DirecTV for nearly $50 billion, or the low to mid-90s per share, and has been working to finalize the deal in the coming weeks. And we know that that's pretty much been in progress and pretty much finished up. And we're going to talk a lot more about what that means for us as consumers and big businesses.
Well, if you've heard anything in the past few months about NSA and Edward Snowden, you'll actually see that Sony Pictures is going to make a movie about him. We haven't heard enough about him already. So let's see here. Franchise producers Michael Wilson and Barbara Broccoli will make the movie version of No Place to Hide. It's also the same guy that brought James Bond. So,
you just wish your last name was Broccoli, don't you?
Broccoli. I had to double-check that, unless I'm saying it wrong.
You're like Barkley on TNG. Hopefully we have some TNG fans out there. So along the same lines of security, one of the pioneers of facial recognition is now fearing that his work may have not so great consequences. Dr. Joseph J. Attick is a pioneering researcher and entrepreneur in the field of biometrics and facial recognition, and after investigating the technology in the early 90s, he went on to make his fortune as the rest of the world started to catch on. And according to a New York Times report, he made millions of dollars after the bulk of his company, L1 Identity, was bought out by a French military contractor. According to the article, though, he's starting to have some worries and concerns about his programming and how it's going to be used and who it's going to be used by. So, interesting news there.
Continuing on with the iMessage, I saw these together. Essentially, since there is a lawsuit going on, there's people that have plans on how to shut off iMessage, but Apple has said they don't know how to fix the problem. I'm sure after the lawsuit, I'm sure they'll come up with a pretty quick solution after that, but... hopefully they'll resolve it pretty quickly, because not everyone loves the iOS devices. Some do, some don't.
So. For their sake, I hope they do. We're going to transition into a different part of the show now, since we went over a few of the articles for today. In the next part of our show, we're going to talk about some hardware and software apps that we've found that are interesting to use and good for you to use. So transition into the app of the day.
All right. The people.
app of the day is what we're going to talk about next. So for the app of the day today, we're going to talk about Malwarebytes. You can find them at malwarebytes.org. And a program that Kurt and I use very often, whether we work on a machine for someone on our campus or whether we work on a machine for someone at their house, Malwarebytes, anti-malware, is a great free product you can use to clean off malware and spyware from your machine.
It's a very cool piece of software. Now, a lot of times when you install it, there is a something about enabling a paid version. Now, I'm sure the paid version works pretty well. We haven't actually used the full live version of it to where you are doing a continuous scan. What we typically do is just a one-time scan to do the clean in it. Recently, it's been an update to where you don't even have to worry about doing a full scan or a quick scan or scanning a particular folder. In this case, what they've actually done is bundled it all into one, and it's very easy. You see in bright red numbers how many objects you've detected, and even gives you, says you want to quarantine this, you want to ignore this, and it's a very cool piece of software, and it should be used in conjunction with what you've always got running.
Exactly. So, you know, for the free software that you could use, something like Microsoft Security Essentials, you could install that on your machine if you have a PC and have that running as your antivirus, and then install Malwarebytes as an additional program and run that scan once a week. Make sure your computer stays clean. Sometimes you can go out to a website and not even realize you can hover your cursor over a particular section of the screen, and you might scroll or click, and then boom, there you go. You've got malware, you've got pop-ups, you've got all kinds of problems, and Malwarebytes will clean that off. According to their site, the free software includes the anti-malware, anti-spyware scanner. It also includes the anti-rootkit scanner. So those nasty malware and viruses that get deep down into your computer and are very difficult to remove, it contains a scanner for those as well. And it also has something that they call advanced malware removal. Now, if you get the paid version, which is $25, you also get malicious website blocking, real-time protection, hyper-scan mode. You get a update scheduler where it updates itself instead of you having to update it every time you start the program. And so it also has some additional software to keep malware from changing processes on your machine. And essentially, one day when you fire up your machine, you get that really nasty box, right, Kurt?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something you don't want. So Malwarebytes is really good for that.
Now, typically, when you'd want to run this is, like I said, maybe once a week or so. I mean, this will get everything from the really deep rootkits, which are actually very difficult to remove, to things like what I'm seeing a lot lately is add-ons onto browsers. And it's not even technically a virus. It's not even doing anything truly malicious. It's just there, and it's just annoying. A lot of times the ask toolbar is there. That's not that bad. But other ones you have will be ones that pose as antivirus, but it's actually not antivirus. You know, it'll say Windows Security 2014 or something like that. And from there, you know, you'll have to close it, but it won't close. And it'll say, give us your credit card information, and we'll get rid of the virus. Well, it is the virus. So Malwarebytes is definitely the program you want to use to help get rid of that. And after you run it, do a restart and see if it comes up again. So that's pretty much it.
And so if you're having those type of problems with your computer and you go home and you look up on the computer screen, you got all kinds of pop-ups and you got all kinds of advertisements asking you to do buy this and buy that to fix your computer, those are malware and spyware. So get rid of those with Malwarebytes, www.malwarebytes.org. They are it's a free product that you can get. There's no advertising from us or anything. It's just a product that we wanted to tell you about, something that we found that works good for computers. And so now we're going to transition into the next section of our show. And I told you earlier that we were going to talk about some of these articles in a little bit more detail. So now we're going to do that. Thank you. So the next topic of our episode, very first debut episode of Tech Talk today, we're going to be talking about a couple of different articles, a couple of different things that have come out that are real big in tech news this week, and we're going to discuss them back and forth. This week it's just going to be Kurt and I discussing back and forth. Next week we'll have Eric Greer, the co-founder and CEO of CIS in Corbin, Kentucky, here at the studio with us, and he'll be discussing the topics with us next week as well, and hopefully we'll have some more folks that come and be guests with us and discuss the topics along with Kurt and I. This week, news has come out today, actually. The BBC reported on this, and several other news folks reported on this, that the United States has found that China is hacking certain industries across the United States and stealing information from those companies, some of them having to do with nuclear plans and such like that. And the China military has been accused of stealing these trade secrets from U.S. companies. So, Kurt, this brings up a big question about security. What do we need to do as first of all, as individuals to increase security on our machines? And then we'll talk about the big companies, the big businesses.
To be honest, and this is a little bit more advanced in terms of what the average person can do, is it's been released that there is hardware level intrusion and coming from, say, China, whatever, and so it's almost good to build your own machine. But since that's not available to everybody, that's the very first thing you might want to do. But obviously, various virus scans you might want to run. That's we look out for. If you see anything odd happening. I don't know. What else would you say?
Well, we're always getting those kind of emails where it says, Uncle Bob in Zimbabwe has, died. And yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you got to watch out for those kind of things, and you got to watch and make sure that you, anytime you click on something in an email or click on something on your computer, that you know where that's coming from. And if you don't, then don't respond to it. Don't click on it. So, that's a good security practice from a personal computer level and from mine and your level. But what about these big businesses? How are they going to keep and the United States has accused China of this, and they say that they have documentation to back it up, that the Chinese military is actually doing this. But how do these companies protect themselves from this type of thing?
Well, they, a lot of times, depending on how big the company is, they try to rely on their IT departments, really. We personally have seen that. But there's a certain level where we almost can't protect, we as an IT department, we can't really protect everything. And it's up to the users. So I think the next step really is education. Be able to identify obvious phishing attempts. And that's phishing with a PH, actually, typically is how that goes. You look for, basically someone will call and say they are part of some group or somewhere. Some little piece of information might be correct. And then they wait on you to give them the other piece of information. I've heard of people walking down and saying, hey, I'm part of, here to clean the office or something or other. I don't know, whatever group they're part of. And people will let them right in. Well, if you don't watch them closely, they may sit down on an unlocked computer. They may do, just plug in a flash drive, run their program, and it starts sending usage data back to wherever their home base is. That's one thing. We need to educate the end users as to just to look out for these kind of attempts and set up policies, have policies in place to keep that from happening.
Exactly. So we're talking there about social engineering. The person who comes in and says, hi, my name is Bob and I work with IT and I need to work on your machine, and you don't know who they are. You've never seen them before, and you let them work on your computer. So we're talking about physical access. We're talking about the person who somehow or another gets a key to get entry to your data center. Ooh, yeah. And walks in and inserts something either in a network jack or in a server, a USB drive in a server, and takes control of your network that way. So we're talking about physical attacks. Not only are we talking about physical attacks, but I doubt that any of the folks that are being accused by the United States of doing this, these companies, actually walked into the building. So really we're talking about network attacks. We're talking about remote network attacks. So, how do we protect from remote network attacks? We protect from those with firewalls. We protect those with next generation firewalls, with stateful inspection. And so, that's what these businesses need to be looking at, and not only do they need to be looking at it, which I'm sure they already do, but also the big businesses like Cisco and Fortinet and Palo Alto, these folks that make these next generation firewalls, they need to be up to date on this stuff and looking at this. And this is a big deal. I mean, we've seen, you know, the Target incident. I mean, you know, where they took all those Social Security numbers and things like that. Who was liable for that?
Target was. Though the breach actually happened, as we discovered, was actually in their who did their credit card authorizations. I mean, it's not really fair that Target gets blamed for it, though honestly they should have had some sort of some testing in place, some sort of penetration testing, pen testing, to see, you know, what's happening, where it's happening at. Was it somebody's fault? Did they just leave it, you know, some port wide open? Is there some reason that, you know, that's where that came from, is from their credit card authorization company. That's one thing that actually keeps me up at night sometimes, thinking about where that came from, who does our credit card authorizations, you know.
Exactly, and anywhere you go on the web to get that information, I mean, it's like the Heartbleed attack that came out a few weeks ago against OpenSSL. I mean, that put lots of businesses and lots of websites vulnerable, and normal Joes like me and you would go out to a website and go to purchase something, and you know, you always look in the top left hand corner for that little lock that tells you that you've got a secure web page, and that didn't mean anything. With the OpenSSL Heartbleed, that didn't mean that it was secure. And so, you know, you made a good point at the first that it's up to the end user to make sure we do things securely. But it's also going to be up to businesses and big businesses to make sure that we keep things protected. And you know, I think it's good that the United States is watching for this stuff. They're watching for their own interests. And, you know, I would doubt that they're going to apprehend any of these people from the Chinese government. That would be very strange and unusual if that actually happened, because I don't think the Chinese government's going to turn them over. But no. If they were to, you know, that needs to be prosecuted, because that's our data.
Yeah.
It's our data.
One thing I've read, and unfortunately I don't have an article to back it up, don't have the source, but is some of these hacking attempts are coming from civilians. They're not even coming from the military side. And they're just, you know, they'll turn over whatever data to whatever company or even the military, whoever will pay the most over there in China. And there the government can actually say, we're not a part of this, but it's coming from the civilian level. So what can you do? Well, they obviously aren't going to turn someone over. And even, you know, that takes even more investigation that they would have to do if it was something they would turn over somebody for at the civilian level, that is.
So for you folks out there listening, keep an eye on this topic. We'll have more news about this next week, and we'll kind of review it. But keep an eye on the topic and see how it continues, and how the United States is going to deal with this issue, and how China reacts to the issue as well. Now, we've told you that this is the debut of Tech Talk today. If this was not the debut of Tech Talk today, we would have been talking about net neutrality for the last forever. So today we're going to talk about it, because that's the big thing, net neutrality. If you haven't heard about that, then what we're talking about is the ability for everyone to have the same access and the same ability to get bandwidth speeds from internet service providers to the internet, and not only speeds but access to, you know, to the internet in general. And this has become a big topic over the last few weeks, and it's, you know, it's went all the way up to the feds. Tom Wheeler with the feds is, you know, is looking at this. You know, this when people think about the FCC, and when they think about communications, and when they think about Tom Wheeler, they're going to think about net neutrality. And so, you know, there's some questions that come along with this. You know, and Kurt, you know, how would you feel if the big companies got better bandwidth and better connection at the risk of you not being able to get that, to get connection to the internet?
Well, there are two separate ways you could feel about this. There's someone like me who is a little more worried about the tech side of things, and I wouldn't be very happy about this at all. I'd be very upset because I wouldn't be able to access the same bandwidth, and bandwidth is obviously the amount of data that's passing over the lines, whether it be fiber or copper. I wouldn't be able to get the same bandwidth that a company has, and I may be paying. I may be able to pay the same money that they are, but I still wouldn't be allowed to, because I'm not part of, say, some list the government has, or I'm not registered with them a certain way. However the however it would be implemented. But if I was one of these people that, say, got on online every once in a while to check my email, and if not streaming too much, I might not be unaffected. And that's why the great populace really may not see why this is even important. Netflix is fighting very hard to keep net neutrality neutral, keep things going how they are. Honestly, I believe like this is the golden age of the internet before the government will step in and start regulating it. The government, what have they stepped in so far? They stepped in with railroads. This is the first time they started dividing up who can have how much and who had what in terms of what company. And then they stepped in and started regulating phone lines too. And honestly, I feel like it's inevitable sooner or later, but I do not see all the pros that that all these lawmakers are seeing.
I think we're looking at an infrastructure issue myself. I mean, think of it this way. If we want to be able to have everybody watch 4K streaming from Netflix, we got to have a better infrastructure.
That's true.
Google Fiber, for instance. I mean, you got to have something like Google Fiber everywhere in order for that to take place. So, it looks to me like it's an infrastructure issue. What's at stake here? Is access to the internet at stake? I don't know. Probably not. Is it going to affect regular Joes like me and you very much? I don't think so. Probably not. But is it going to make us take a look at infrastructure? I hope so. Because infrastructure is really where it starts to be able to provide this bandwidth. And the reason we're even talking about this anyway, and the reason that net neutrality has been curved and steered into this idea of certain people being able to get better bandwidth than others, is because the bandwidth's not there sometimes.
That's true.
And the bandwidth needs to be there in order for things to continue. And so, again, we're going to talk about another topic with AT&T and DirecTV here in a minute, and we're going to talk about infrastructure there as well, but that's, in my opinion, that's where it's at.
Part of net neutrality is you see, you start paying for how much bandwidth you've taken up so far, and net capping, and that's a lot big component of this. I know I like to pull up Netflix or Hulu or whichever streaming service, and imagine if you could only watch, say, four episodes worth, or maybe even two movies, and then you just have to stop, and you couldn't keep going until either they're rolled over to the next bill, or depending on if it's how much data you have per day. I know a lot of people that would not be happy about that, especially if things change in that direction, which they may be heading that way. I know my wife wouldn't be happy if she had to stop in the middle of a marathon.
Exactly. I don't think anybody would be.
No.
So, it's an interesting topic, and it's going to be interesting to see where it goes. It's going to be interesting if we... run into a SOPA type thing here where it just kind of dies away, or if it actually becomes real big news and stays big news. So it's going to be interesting to watch over the next few weeks to see where this goes.
Yeah. Let's see. Moving on.
AT&T and DirecTV have merged. So that news came out today, and so there's still some legality that's got to go on there, but it's pretty much a done deal. And so this brings up just a lot of topic discussion. I mean, AT&T and DirecTV. I mean, it's like two giant sumo wrestlers in the ring, and somehow or another they clashed together and they became one. And one big, huge, giant sumo wrestler with multiple heads. I think it's best for us first to look at, what are the strengths of AT&T and DirecTV and what are their weaknesses? What's your thoughts on that, Kurt?
So, AT&T, what all do they provide? Let's see here. They are an internet provider. Probably first and foremost, businesses might look to AT&T. They are tier one, is it?
That's
tier
correct,
one provider.
Yeah.
So, they are at the top, basically, in terms of their access to infrastructure. Whether or not they're actually delivering on that infrastructure is another topic, but they are tier one provider, so they provide internet. They also have cell phones. I'm sure you pick Verizon, AT&T, whatever any of the other ones are, but those are the big ones. And what else does AT&T provide?
So internet and internet connectivity, mm-hmm. wireless, cell phone coverage. You've also got POTS, plain old telephone service.
I completely forgot about that.
Because I don't have one of those at my home.
I don't either.
You know, and that's not something that a lot of people have anymore, but it's a huge infrastructure. There, if the plain old telephone system was to go away today, then it would cause a lot of issues because there's still a lot of things that work on it.
That's true. Yeah.
I heard of a business that was implementing a VoIP telephone system, voice over IP telephone system, and they had to purchase POTS, plain old telephone service lines, to plug into the fire system because the fire system wouldn't talk to the VoIP system.
That's crazy.
And so, you know, it's still out there, and AT&T does a lot of that.
And part of that is, I'm sure they probably could write to build a have a product that does VoIP for their that system, but in a lot of cases, it's because of their legal issues. It's written that you have to go over a telephone line. In some cases, hopefully, we'll get some legislation, something or other that can go around that, or not even be like legislation. But hopefully, we'll catch up with the times. At least, you know, whoever's making all the laws and rules that say that, you know, internet is a viable thing, internet over broadband, or however you'd want to send the data over, that it's not over POTS. So and. That even brings me to another point, is who is connected now. There are people, mostly in Generation Y, in the millennials, those born after right around probably the late 80s, all the way up to the late 2000s. There are people that don't have a connection to their home. They do not have a physical line to their home. They don't have, in some cases, they don't even have a broadband or a cable or DSL connection. It's all over. They'll do it through their cell phones. They'll get their internet through there. Their cable. They don't have cable. They'll go through streaming through Netflix or, you know, they'll use a Chromecast so they can still connect their TV, which is still using either Netflix.
I'm counting Hulu. Friends in my head right now that they're like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I told my parents we're moving to a new place, and they said, "Well, what's your number?" I said, "Well, we don't have one." "Oh, well, what about 911?" I said, "Well, now you can do get on your cell phone now," which was something that took a while to implement, actually. You know, so how is this going to bring it back to AT&T and DirecTV? What will change?
Well, you know, and also, you know, some strengths and of DirecTV.
Oh yeah.
I mean, DirecTV has satellites up in the air everywhere. I mean, they can reach remote corners of the U.S. that AT&T doesn't reach. You know, they have infrastructure.
Oh,
we talked
yeah.
about that earlier. AT&T has infrastructure, and DirecTV has infrastructure. So, I mean, those two things are things that they have, infrastructure. So, you know, that's really what we're looking at here. We're looking at a infrastructure issue to see who can get the most infrastructure and who can provide the most services to people. But the other big thing that's going to lead us into the rest of this discussion is the programming that DirecTV has. Think about it for a second. DirecTV has all these deals
Bundle.
With exactly all Bundle. These deals with these different TV shows. So you know the NFL Network. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously ESPN, ABC. Those kind of parent companies, they have deals with all those folks.
Hmm.
And you know, Intel. Intel tried to get into this business. They lost out. They couldn't get TV contracts to try to push the – what we're talking about here is pushing TV
right.
over the internet to people's homes.
Yeah, that's one – sorry to interrupt. That's one reason that I've seen with reasons people don't want to go with just Netflix and no cable is sports. I mean, Netflix currently has no way of getting the contracts to do sports because all the networks are holding on very tight and do not want to let that go. So, more than likely, could this be a future competitor to streaming services like Hulu and Netflix?
I believe so. I mean, the question is, how is it going to affect cable cutters? I mean, cord cutters. I mean, I'm a cord cutter.
Right.
At my house, I have a connection to the internet. And that's it. I don't have cable TV. I don't have a dish, a DirecTV. I don't have any. I don't have a telephone line.
Right.
All I have is cable internet. And that's how I get all of my content. So, you know, the question is this going to help cable cutters or is this going to, you know, cord cutters or is this going to hurt them? And, you know, I would think that if AT&T gets this deal with DirecTV and they start pushing more content online, and obviously you have to pay for it. I mean, that's, but can you pay for it a la carte?
So really, what they're going to have to do to be successful is grab those, well, basically our generation, the millennials, and convince them that, hey, we can provide sports, we can provide whatever without you having to tie yourself down to with a cable. Some people don't even want to think about it, to be completely honest, but you know, they'll have to capture that because that is the future.
I mean, you think about, like, watch ESPN, for instance. You folks out there listening, if you have, an iPad or an iPhone or an Android device, you can fire up watch ESPN on there, and as long as you have a login to a cable company that you're paying for, you can watch that content on your mobile device. You have it with you. Now, this year, NCAA Final Four required you to have a login to a cable company, but the year before that, they allowed you to pay for it. You could pay to get the entire tournament on your mobile device.
So now they're tying you into you have to have their service first.
Right. And so, but not only that, but do people like the ability to take their content with them? And I would say the answer to that is yes.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
You know, why be tied down to the living room when you can, you know, we're a mobile generation, when you can, you know, fire it up when you're sitting in the airport. You can fire it up when you're, you're sitting there waiting for your food to come at the restaurant, and you want, you know, you and your family are sitting there and you maybe want to fire up the game and watch it for a second while you're sitting there at the restaurant. You can just fire it up on your phone or your iPad, check on the score. You're watching it live over the internet. So, you know, is this going to allow more of these type of services to be mobile to consumers and to purchase them, the most important part, to purchase them a la carte? I have two boys. You know, I want to purchase the Disney Channel and get that on all my devices.
Right.
Is that going to help this?
You know, honestly, you could probably even tie this back into what we said about net neutrality with capping, because if we start relying more and more heavily on services that are streamed like this, and we get capped after, 2 gigs, 3 gigs, what's going to happen? I bet that will be an incentive that they'll have to have for each company. It says, well, this plan here has doesn't have HD, but they have, 5 gigs streaming. And, well, this one has HD, but only has 4 gigs. That sounds terrible. Why do you want to have a higher bandwidth type of content versus with a limited amount of storage or bandwidth? But man, that they're going to have to find a lot of different ways to convince people to go with this kind of service. And where's they going to leave people that have no idea what the word bandwidth means? I mean, they're going to have to keep all that stuff all connected until they can, you know, teach people, hey, you can get this on your phone now, and you don't have to have this line here, and here's why it's important, here's the incentive for this.
And, you know, you're exactly right. I mean, you know, when are we going to get to that point? And the other question is, when is somebody going to wake up out there, Google, and purchase Dish? When's somebody going to wake up out there and say, oh, wait, they're letting AT&T and DirecTV do this, so why don't I purchase Dish? You're talking about and I said Google because you're talking about a company like Google that's trying to push out, once
fiber.
Again, their word is infrastructure.
Oh,
and through fiber.
How
but they're trying to
fiber do they have?
Exactly, and they're trying to push out infrastructure. Well, what happens when you magically have all of that money sitting out there like Google does, and you buy Dish Network? I mean, you have infrastructure out in the sky galore, and we're not talking so much about getting internet to people at that
right,
point. We're talking about getting content to people, and you know, content includes advertisements, includes money, and if they want a way to make more money to push out their fiber project, I mean, you know, you spend money for Dish, and then you get money off of it.
You brought up a good point, and I hate to change gears like this pretty quickly, but Google, what all do they provide? You can get your phone, you can get your fiber of your internet. They tell you how you can browse the internet with their browser. We'll see what else is there. There's an entire operating system, which again is web-based, where they can provide how you do your regular computing, how you work on Word documents and everything like that. See what else do they provide?
Google's not just a search engine anymore.
That's true. But think of all the content that they could trace back to whoever at gmail.com. I mean, I have a couple Gmail accounts, and I'm sure, you know, they can see all my search history. They can see all of the sites I go to if I'm using Chrome. They can see if I had an Android device. I'm sure they'd see where I go and how long I've been there, and you know how long my phone has been on, everything. Now they can also see all the browsing habits I have at home if I had Google Fiber. That's, for some people, that might be a little scary, a little conspiracy theorist. You know, I've heard a joke online that says Google is going to be Skynet one day. So, you know, it's just a matter of when it's...
Interesting.
It decides, obviously, that's people thinking out and being facetious, but...
Right.
You know, are they going to ride... You know, they're going to... Now they're working on their cars to drive themselves.
Right.
And that's way in the future, but still. I mean, what all else will they provide? Didn't they have the slogan, "Don't be evil"?
I don't know about you, but I'd like to take a nap on the way to work in the morning. That would be nice.
Yeah, that would be very nice. I've got a 30-minute commute. It'd be really nice.
So AT&T and DirecTV, interesting merger, and you know, interesting on many levels. You know, obviously the money that they paid for it, but interesting to see what's going to happen when that merger finishes up. Let's move on to one other topic for our discussions, and this is an article, and I may have, Kurt, if you've got that article pulled up over there, the $7 USB stick providing internet for everybody. I thought that was an interesting article that we found, and you know, the ability to provide a USB stick that includes a operating system that can run on pretty much any machine, and you know, be able to take an old machine and make that machine kind of like a newer machine that works well and is able to get on the internet for people who can't afford new machines.
Mm. Now, does that work on the same principle as where we plugged in through Citrix?
It's a similar principle to that, but this would be a low cost piece of equipment that you could plug into an old computer and essentially boot up an operating system off a flash drive. So right now, the way your operating system at home probably works is you have a computer and it goes, and it whenever you turn it on, it goes out and it looks at your hard drive that's inside of your computer, and it brings up the operating system, and then you know you're in Windows 7 or Windows 8. Hopefully you're not in Windows XP, because if you are, you need to upgrade, because it's no longer supported.
Yes.
But you know, if you're in one of those operating systems, and you can go in, you can access the internet and things like that. But what if you have an older computer, say from 10 or 15 years ago? The hardware still runs, but it cannot physically run a newer operating system. Then this USB stick, this $7 USB stick that they brought out, is going to bring this internet to more people. So this brings up an interesting topic of discussion. I heard the other day that 1 in 3 people in South and Central Africa use a feature phone to read to their children. They were talking about low-cost technology and literacy. What's your thoughts, Kurt? Low-cost technology and literacy, not only for foreign countries, but for the states.
Now, say feature phone. Feature phone is basically, you know, before the iPhone or before even, let's say, BlackBerry. It's just a phone that maybe it does more than talk, text, and you know, I guess Snake.
Snake. I like that game.
Basically, you know, you can put calendars on there. Just like I said, it just has features. So this is, you know, not one that has maybe, say, 100% full browser like you would have, say, Safari on an iPhone or Chrome on an Android or even IE on a Windows phone, where you can have content inside of, you know, whatever web pages you're on. This is just a phone that maybe just pulls up text, to be completely honest, maybe images. So you said they're using this for showing us reading, literacy?
Right, exactly. So the article that I heard said that 1 in 3 people that they surveyed in the South and Central Africa countries, they're really big on feature phones over there. Mm-hmm. They don't have the technology like, you know, laptops and computers like we have over here to have that technology, but they were using those feature phones to read and increase literacy. And so, you know, my thoughts were when I read this article, is you know, this actually going to increase or give people the ability to maybe increase literacy by being able to access more than just a book in the library? Mm-hmm. You know, books in the library are online now. Will this give them the ability to keep up on news? Will this give them the ability to maybe even spark a child's imagination to want to learn about computers and become some sort of computer engineer when they get older?
Now, let's see here. To compare, for me, the internet. Before I even get out of bed, I will look at my phone and check to see if I got any emails. That's use of the internet right there. I will check Facebook to see, you know, what's going on there. Is there any bad news you got to worry about? Is there anybody's birthday I got to wish? By the way, I'm a little behind on my birthday wishes on Facebook. Anyway, so, you know, the internet for me is just an extension of any waking thought I have. You know, my wife will ask me a question and I'll say, I don't know. Let's find out. I whip out my phone. She's like, well, we're eating right now. Why do you put that away? You know, for somebody who doesn't have that immediate access, what would the internet be like for them? I guess, you know, education is going to be the very first thing I think of. Like you mentioned literacy, but, you know, will this see a new breed of user that people have to cater to? Is there going to be something different that people that have just a feature phone access to the internet, is there going to be something different that they will want from the internet versus what we want? I highly doubt they're going to be doing a heavy social networking, but I'm sure they're going to be doing some kind of networking versus how to reach out to other people more than just calling or texting.
Yeah, I would assume so. And so, you know, it's an interesting idea that you could take a $7 flash drive, and even if they don't purchase it, even if you purchase it for them and hand it to them and say, hey, you know, maybe it's in a place where, like, for instance, like a rec league or something, where they have older computers there. Maybe they've got computers there that haven't been updated in 10 or 15 years. Maybe they're running ME. Maybe they're running Windows 2000.
Oh, please.
And you can take that. You can't upgrade that to Windows 7 or Windows 8 because it just won't run it.
Hardware won't run it.
So you take that flash drive, which I'm sure is some sort of variant of Linux, and you plug that in, and you give those people the ability, once they have an internet connection, obviously, to use an old, outdated computer. Maybe they don't have the funds to buy a new one, and give them the ability to get online and to increase literacy, increase their quality of life with being able to use that. So, interesting topics from today. And again, the United States and China hacking issue, we'll revisit that hopefully in the next few days. And the net neutrality and AT&T, we'll definitely be looking at those. One other interesting article that Kurt found was about CDs dying. Kurt, this just sounded interesting to me.
I remember reading in a book in, let's see here, I think it was around the seventh grade, where they said, how long will a CD last? And someone said, as long as you keep it in a cool place, out of sunlight, it would last forever. They did not put a date on this. They said it would last forever. And we come to find out that may not be the case. Let's see here. Perhaps you thought that since music CDs are mechanically stamped and sealed in tough plastic that they'd last forever. Some may already be dead. There's this interesting picture on the article I saw that has two of the same CD, where one has been subject to extreme heat and humidity in a test chamber, and it is almost completely see-through. You cannot see. I mean, the text is still in there from the writing, but that's it. It's pretty much see-through. And that's from, actually, the Library of Congress, looks like. So what happens whenever a CD starts to deteriorate is you have what are called edge rot. Oxygen will seep in through the plastic and will react with the metal layer because, I guess we should back up and say, how was data printed on a CD? Let's see here.
So data is printed on the CD when you, inside that CD-ROM drive that you have in your computer in front of you, you have a laser in there. And not the fun kind that you point at people and the shine in their eyes, but it's a different type of laser, a little more powerful, that actually etches into the coating that's on the bottom of the CD or DVD. And those etchings, it's almost like it's the same concept as turntable recorders. That etching in the bottom of there, etched by that laser, is then can be read by the laser, and the laser turns the light refraction that comes off of that, it turns that into bits zeros and ones, and sends that back to the computer. So essentially, with your old records, when you know when the needle went across there, depending upon the depth of the needle in the Mylar is how that it would actually play the sound. Well, this is digital. The laser light reads the etching, how the etching is etched on the CD or DVD, and then turns that into bits and produces that information through programming language on your computer.
Right. That's one interesting thing to think of is, just what the letter A, what is that, 65? And that's translated as, how many ones and zeros make up just one letter? And you're making, entire sounds just from ones and zeros. That's one thing people, don't really consider. But so how, let's see, I have here how actually a CD or DVD, because can include DVDs, how that they start to degrade. Is what's known as edge rot. Oxygen will seep into the plastic and react with the metal layer because there is that metal reflection right there. Bronzing, which is corrosion due to pollutants in the air. That's my favorite. Laser burn. Lasers also will differ, and some may shorten CD life because some of them may be a little bit more powerful. It will erode just a little bit off of each disc. And mishandling. This is probably the one most people are familiar with, is scratches and even stickers and writing on top of the CD.
I've been guilty of that one.
Me too. I'd go to somebody's house and see a whole stack of CDs out of their cases, and I cringe because I've seen exactly what will happen. You get that one little scratch on your favorite song, and it will skip over that or just never even get past it over and over and over, and why didn't I put this in a digital format? Which brings us to the next point. Back up your CDs. Put them in a digital format. Pretty much any computer has built-in software to do this, but iTunes can do this. Windows Media Player can do this. Pretty much any media player can do what's called rip a CD, depending on if it's a CD you bought, it should have the track titles, track names, and everything out on the internet somewhere. There's several tagging databases. Actually, I don't have any pulled up. Usually, they're built into whatever player you're connecting to. But if it's a custom-made CD, it will not find that track information automatically, and you will have to type it in manually.
All right. Well, that finishes up this section of the topic. So now we're going to move on to our next section of topic, and we're going to move on to something that we want to bring in to the technology discussion, which is tech in numbers. So today we're going to review some tech stocks for the day and just take a look and see where things are going. So today in the technology stock market, we were down for the sector summary. It was negative 0.38% today down. But I looked here, and one of the gainers for today, actually 0.3%, a plus 3 or a 12%, 12.2% change for today was Smart Technologies. They make smart boards, things that go in classrooms, different items like that, and they were actually up 0.3 of a point today for a 12.2% positive change. So congrats to them. Great work today in the technology sector. And our last topic for today, as we get ready to close out here, is weird and funny tech. So funny products or stuff that we've seen or heard or read about. And I think Kurt had a doozy today for weird and funny tech.
Okay. Before touchscreens, you had buttons. Well, I guess when you very first started, you had you had 1, 2, 3, 1 through 9, and the letters spread across there. Well, then BlackBerry revolutionized everything by having a full keyboard out across the entire thing. I even saw where there were lawsuits of people hurting their thumbs because of texting with their little BlackBerries all the time. Well, now there's not really so many keyboards out there anymore. Full QWERTY keyboards on your phone. And a lot of people are switching to iPhone. They have to go with an iPhone. Maybe their company provides one, and they have to switch to it. Well, let's say you still miss those buttons. There is an add-on for you.
Wow.
Yes, you can slide in. It's actually, I think one I saw actually has a case that slides on the top of the iPhone in the bottom, and you have a full keyboard that matches several models. I believe the 9700, the BlackBerry 9700 Bold, I think it is. It matches that keyboard almost exactly. And I'm sure everyone listening has her have seen that iPhone at least once. You know, if you get that one button right on the front facing you, that button is replicated towards the bottom right. So, I mean, you lose no functionality. It doesn't cover up the screen. It actually elongates the phone, however, you know, I guess, about an inch and a half maybe. But you can get all of your typing, every bit of it, out of the way right with that little add-on. And I've heard that Apple's actually not too fond of this device.
That was my next question. Have they gotten sued yet?
Yes, BlackBerry is actually suing them. It, like, if you just looked at the bottom half of the BlackBerry and the and this whole little device, it almost is a match. I mean, there's, I don't know if anybody's ever seen a BlackBerry, but each button on, like, one half of it is angled towards your right thumb, and on the left half of it's angled towards your left thumb, and they even have those angles down pat. I used to have a phone that had this thing, and it was a dream to text on. But, you know, I think we've moved on now to touch interface. But that you know, that's there. You know, if you want it. $100, I think it was.
$100.
$100, right?
You can
there.
Turn your iPhone into a BlackBerry for $100.
Wannabe BlackBerry.
The worst $100 you've ever spent in your life. All right. Well, that finishes up for our show today on Tech Talk Today. We thank you for listening to today's show. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/WCCR Tech Talk. You can also check out the podcast of today's show by searching Tech Talk Today on iTunes. So stay tuned next week as we discuss the latest tech news with Eric Greer, the co-founder and CEO of CIS in Corbin, Kentucky. And so we're looking forward to having him on the show.
All right. So for the that wraps it up for this today. Stay with us from 7 to 9 with the Figure 4 Fallout with Russell Reitner, Bo Kidd, Casey Malone, Dustin Hardin, and Justin Durbin. And we're going to leave you with, since last I heard it was Joe Cocker's birthday, we're going to leave you with a track from him, all right? Y'all take care.